This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. The latest Trump volley in the trade wars is the U.S. president threatening 30% tariffs on goods from Mexico and the European Union, all by August 1st. Some trading partners have gotten letters. ABC's Selena Wang.
Here are some of the other key trading partners that have also been hit with these letters. It includes close allies, key partners like Japan and South Korea. They have 25% tariffs threatened on them for August 1st, 35% tariffs on Canada, and massive 50% tariffs on Brazil.
FEMA repeatedly granted appeals to remove Central Texas's Camp Mystics buildings from their 100-year flood map, as the camp expanded on a dangerous floodplain, that from an Associated Press review. Mandatory evacuation orders as a wildfire threatens the Grand Canyon. Preliminary findings into the Air India crash suggest the aircraft's fuel control switches were turned off, causing a loss of engine power shortly after takeoff. This is ABC News. Days after President Trump toured a new immigration detention center in the Florida Everglades that officials have been calling Alligator Alcatraz, conditions there now being described by people held inside. They describe worms in the food, toilets that don't flush, and mosquitoes and other insects everywhere. Among U.S. lawmakers touring Alligator Alcatraz today, talking to reporters before going in, Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Florida Democrat.
The cruelty is the point. I mean, it is brutally hot, as we can all see. There are insects everywhere. These are not conditions that you should ever put anyone in.
Government officials disputing the claims of detainees. Britain's oldest World War II veteran, Donald Rose, has died at 110. Rose took part in the D-Day landings on June 6, 1944. He was part of the division that liberated the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in northern Germany. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big brutal bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes
right.
In the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talk about something that should scare each and every one of us, no matter what your politics, your religion, or where you come from, any of that. ICE is now the single largest law enforcement agency in the federal government with a budget and surveillance reach that would make the old German Stasi jealous. And with Trump at the helm, any president at the helm, this kind of unchecked militarized power, honestly, is a direct threat to the freedom of each and every working person in this country. You want to know what keeps me up at night? It's not just the raids that are going on, the detentions or the deportations. It's the fact that ICE, thanks to Donald Trump and his one big beautiful nightmare bill, is now sitting on $170 billion of our tax dollars, more money and muscle than any law enforcement arm in the entire country's history. And what are they doing with it? Well, we find out that they're buying up your data. They're vacuuming up your insurance claims. They're grabbing your medical bills, your license plate numbers, your utility records, how much power you're using, all in the name of Homeland Security. They're tapping into private databases like ClaimSearch, which holds 1.8 billion insurance claims and 58 million medical records, all with your personal info attached. And don't think for a second that this is just about immigrants. Once that data is in the system, it's fair game for any agency, any purpose. Oh, I don't know, like Elon Musk and his Doge ferrets. And honestly, looking at ICE with almost no meaningful oversight should scare the you-know-what out of you. I know. Congress can hold hearings. The courts, they can issue rulings. When you've got the kind of power this agency now has with the kind of money they've got, as much firepower as they've got, and ultimately the kind of political cover, there's no accountability. There's no accountability going to happen. And the thing is, we've seen it again, time and again. Whether it's customs officers encouraging a kid to drink liquid meth at the border, or agents caught abusing migrants, or even, what was that guy who was hiding cameras in bathrooms? You know, the so-called bad apples who never, ever face any real consequences. Why? Because the machine just keeps rolling. And the rest of us are told, just trust the process because we're doing good work going after them. And now what we also see is the Trump administration's wrapping all of this, wrapping it up in the flag like we do. And now the Bible, that's right. The latest Department of Homeland Security video came out this week. They're quoting Isaiah. Here I am, send me, while playing God's Gonna Cut You Down over footage of border agents in tactical gear. Look, they're not enforcing the law. They're on a divine mission, evidently. Trump himself says he was saved by God to make America great. And look, it's not just blasphemy. It's propaganda. It's propaganda designed to turn law enforcement into holy warriors, to justify any action, no matter how cruel. It's the will of God. God willed us to do these horrible things. And understand, religion's being weaponized to divide us, absolutely, because that's what it does. Also to justify what is unjustifiable, and ultimately to conquer any opposition. If you question the mission, you're unpatriotic. You're unholy. If you stand up for due process, compassion, basic decency, you know, the stuff the country was built on, you're an enemy of the people, or worse, you're an enemy of God himself. Because understand, this is how authoritarians work. It's how they've always operated. They use faith to sanctify violence and hatred, silence dissent, and ultimately to pit people against each other, you against me, us against each other. And let's not forget, all this quote-unquote divine justice nonsense is being carried out by an agency that answers to one single person, the president, whomever that may be. Today it's Trump, tomorrow could be anyone. You comfortable with a stormtrooper agency armed to the teeth with a blank check and a holy mission under the direct command of one single person? I'm not. History has shown us that's a recipe for disaster. History has shown us when you give unchecked power to the executive, when you let law enforcement operate in the shadows, when you turn religion into a weapon, never works out well for the working class. Doesn't work for the poor, the marginalized, none of them. They pay first. But understand, first they came for fill in the blanks. Then they came for me. Then they come for everyone else. It is what it is. They say this is about keeping us safe. Truth is, it's about keeping us scared and divided. While we're fighting over who's a real American, the powerful are getting richer, the surveillance state is getting stronger, and our freedoms just keep slipping away. So the reality is maybe we shouldn't fall for the holy warrior routine. Maybe we should be questioning this a lot more right now before it gets out of hand. Maybe we should question the fact that they're trying to use faith to justify fear and cruelty. And I hope we never get comfortable with the idea that a government agency is too big to be held accountable. I hope we never get there. Because understand, once this machinery of repression is built, it doesn't just go after the quote-unquote other. You go back to the Pastor Niemöller quote. First they came for the socialists, and I said nothing because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I wasn't a trade unionist, and I said nothing. Then they came after the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, and they said nothing. By the time they came for me, there was no one left. Because we know what they're going to do. Once that machinery is built, it doesn't go away. It comes after all of us. And here's the thing. In this moment, we don't get to look back and go, oh, well, we didn't know. I didn't know he was going to do this. I didn't know he was going to go this far. Yeah, you did. And in fact, we spent an entire election cycle talking about being in this place. So when this time around, I've had people go, did you think it was going to be this bad? Yeah. Asked me first time around. I knew it was going to be bad. Didn't know it was going to be that bad. This time around, without question. And here's the other part. And this is the scary part. If you think it's bad now, going to get worse. Going to get a lot worse. Because Congress, one of the three co-equal branches of government, not going to be our savior anytime soon. The court system, no, certainly not. The Roberts Court, there's no profiles and courage there. And when you've got an executive hell-bent on, well, legacy, power, domination, it's a recipe for disaster. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Do you share my concerns? Do you share my concerns of we're heading down the wrong path and we're doing it really quickly? rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about, ICE is scary times. Scary times in which we live. In fact, I came across an article over at The Guardian written by our friend Michael Sonato. His latest article talks about how undocumented construction workers here in the country are facing an increase in exploitation, renewed immigration raids, and look, contractors who are feeling emboldened by threats of deportation, pay cuts are happening, increased workloads, stealing wages, because they know the workers are too afraid to report the abuse, because who are they going to go to? And chances are there's going to be some retaliation. And you've got many undocumented laborers who are now saying, staying out of public spaces, avoiding any contact with anyone virtually, just so they can stay out under the radar. And here's share some thoughts on what's going on. I've asked our good friend Michael Sonato to come share some thoughts. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, anytime. Thanks for having me on again, Rick.
So what made you jump into this? And before you get to that, hasn't this kind of exploitation happened for decades? Is this isn't new, is it?
It's not new, but it's kind of, taken, just it's been energized really by these immigration raids and these immigration policies and what employers are basically hearing from Trump and what I've been hearing from undocumented construction workers, farm workers, across industries where, large portions of immigrants comprise of the workforce is that just employers are emboldened. It's emboldening bad actors. And it's, what's going on is making it very difficult for union organizers and workers to step in, intervene, conduct organizing efforts, inform workers about their rights, and step up for themselves. Under the Biden administration, they started this delayed program for labor enforcement, the DALE program, and that's essentially stopped under Trump. And it was just getting started under Biden, and there were issues with it. And but that gave a person who was experiencing wage theft and was undocumented, they could file a grievance with the Department of Labor, and then they would get a protected status. We're seeing protected immigration status for various countries just get pulled away, and you're hearing from just contradicting things from Trump and his administration. Trump claims that in the recent weeks that he was going to give farm workers reprieve and protections from ICE raids, and then the Secretary of Agriculture said there's not going to be any amnesty, and claimed Medicaid recipients and AI and automation are going to take over farm working, which is ridiculous.
It's laughable at best. No, it's crazy. Yes. But I thought they were going to stop going after these industries that were heavily dependent on undocumented labor. Because, again, the draw here is corporate America. Corporate America keeps saying, hey, you come here, we'll give you jobs because we can exploit you. This is the part that people seem to forget. By having people going deeper and deeper underground, working conditions get much, much worse for everyone. So this kind of exploitation, while not new, as you're saying, at least as I'm hearing you, it's getting that much worse. So, when talking about, the exploitations that are going on, do we... In your reporting, in your investigating of this, what seems to be the most prevalent, since these raids have become more prevalent?
I think the fear is the biggest one. I think it's workers are afraid to, speak out. I've been hearing from workers that a lot of workers who are undocumented aren't going to work. It's changed family dynamics where I've heard from workers where only one parent will go to work because, they're afraid that if both parents get, detained by ICE and arrested, then, the kids will be without anyone to take care of them. So it's, hurting their mental health, hurting people's incomes who are undocumented. These are people doing essential work. They were hailed as, essential workers just a few years ago during the pandemic. And now they're being, propagated, called criminals, union organizers that our immigrants have been detained, farm workers in New York and in Washington. When we saw the SEIU local president in California get arrested in Los Angeles. So, that's another aspect of what I've been hearing from workers and what's going on. One of the biggest things is just, what Trump's immigration policies are viewed by organizers as just another gift to corporate America. For using farm workers as an example, Trump claimed that in early June that they would not be targeting ICE raids. Just a few days later, that got rescinded. Then he said something, a few weeks later that they were working on something, but then his Secretary of Agriculture said that's not going to happen. And what he was talking about was giving farm employers the authority over workers and their immigration status, which is just, I spoke with a farm worker organizer just this week, and she was likening it to slavery because it's putting workers in a position where, their employer gets to choose who and pick. And if, an employer doesn't like a worker because they're a union organizer or because they're ones that's speaking up for, the rights, whether it's wage theft or heat protections or anything like that, they can just call ICE on that. And that's what we're seeing. That's the conditions that are being, amplified There were, like you said, there were already issues, and undocumented workers have been long been exploited in this country for cheap labor. And, you know, American corporations are, you know, profiting off of that in agriculture, in construction, and in various industries.
Yeah, but the question that I come back to, because, look, I've had a number of people go, well, you know what, so what? They're here illegally. They don't deserve rights. And, you know, there's a frame of people out there that think that that's right. I personally don't. I think we're a country of laws. I think we're a country where due process is important. I think ensuring that all workers have access to safe working conditions, decent wages, all that I think is important. But I also understand by having people who are in an undocumented status, what you end up doing is you do hold wages down for everyone else. So I guess kind of the questions that I've got is, one, what do you say to the people who go, so what? We're doing these. They shouldn't be here. And the other thing is, how is this affecting people who are here legally and doing these kind of jobs?
Well, these, you know, undocumented workers are typically doing jobs and work and at wages where, you know, Americans wouldn't be able to do that. There's, you know, reportedly labor shortages in construction, in agriculture. Those workers are paid, you know, very paltry wages.
Right. So. But Michael, here's the thing. I'm going to stop you right there, because, you know what, this is what the folks on the right are saying. By them being here, they're pulling the wages down. Americans would take those jobs, picking lettuce if it were $50 an hour, if they could make a living, they got health care. And I know John McCain tried that a couple of years ago, didn't work. But what do you say to that?
I would say that these workers pay taxes. Undocumented workers actually do pay taxes. They just don't see any of the benefits, you know, from that. And there's varying degrees. They're not a monolith in working these jobs. You know, some are, you know, there's various, you know, some are here on visas. Some are, you know, just trafficked and exploited, tricked. You know, there's just various cases. You know, I think due process is obviously very important for this. And, you know, farm worker unions have been pushing for a path to citizenship, because many of these workers have been here years and years and years.
Right.
You know, working.
Because ultimately, this is a failure of Congress. At the end of the day, all of this stuff falls at the feet of a dysfunctional Congress and political system who doesn't want to fix this system. They want to use it as a divisive tool to keep working people pitted against each other. So there's some red meat to throw out there while still giving a nod to their corporate buddies to exploit labor all across the board.
Absolutely. Immigration reform efforts been stalled in Congress, just even during the Obama years. Just you know, it's just been, and you know, ICE has been a target of criticism for you know, before even Trump took office. But you know, what he's doing is really amplifying that. And you know, there was this week the Economic Policy Institute issued a report based on if Trump succeeds in his target quotas of deporting, you know, 3-4 million undocumented immigrants, the impacts of that are not only going to create in those job losses, but will reverberate in the economy and cause, you know, 2.6 million job losses across the U.S. because the economy depends on those workers, as unfortunate as it is.
And always has. And always has, Michael. I mean, the first generation labor coming into this country is what built the wealth of this country. We seem to forget that. Our grandparents came here, worked for poverty wages, and then next generation did better, next generation. That's kind of the path of the American dream. At least it's what we tell ourselves. And what you now want to do is you want to cut off those pathways.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just worsening conditions at the bottom tier. And, you know, and that's just one aspect of how the Trump administration is attacking worker rights and you know, creating policies and conditions to just worsen working conditions and hurt working people across the board.
You know, what's frustrating to me is we're deploying basically military tactics against housekeepers and people who do yard work and farm workers. And we're going after working people with a military mindset because we've now declared them illegal. And there's a part of our society that's cheering it. But I think the majority of people see it for what it is. It is heavy-handed. It's authoritarian. And eventually, the question becomes, how many of us get swept up in all of this? How many people who are here legally? How many citizens are harmed by this when you've got a military kind of operation going on our shores?
It's just a vehicle of fascism. It's very frightening, very scary. The anti-immigrant xenophobia has, long been in this country as, really propaganda for fascism, for the right. The early 20th century, there were, cartoons about, Italians and such. But now it's, people from Mexico and Central America who are being, labeled as criminals and all sorts of racism being, thrown towards immigrants without, the understanding of who these immigrants are, the work they're doing. Understanding. I keep seeing stories, in Long Island, a Star College student was arrested by ICE. We saw, arrest by ICE of Palestinian protesters. So it's really just, there's been a lot of lies, a lot of, racism, a lot of false claims and about what ICE is doing. And the way that these people are going on with masks, not identifying themselves, essentially kidnapping people, it's very terrifying and concerning for I think everyone.
I go back to and first they came for fill in the blank, and then they came for me, because it always that's always the postulate. If them first, then me. And for me, this is one of those moments where look in our own lives, look at our own heritage, look at our own bloodline and go, what did our grandparents, great grandparents, what did they endure? And what are we doing to future generations of folks? Look, Sonato, I got to think Italian, right?
My father came here when he was 17 years old. He is not a U.S. citizen. So I am concerned for him. So, he has to renew his green card. Are they going to give him any trouble? Or if he doesn't, are there going to be any issues there?
Now my mind goes, because birthright citizenship is something that they're talking about trying to undo. Unfortunately, a court in New Hampshire shot that down for now, but something we're worried about?
The attempts that this administration is even making towards things like that is just horrifying. And I think needs to be called out for what it is, just racism, sheer racism, just coming from people like Stephen Miller, just overt bigots, just no understanding of, and just hate towards immigrants. I see the conservative post from, people like Laura Loomer and, the far right. It's just horrifying to see just straight racism. It's really become a platform of the Republican Party and their policies. When at least years ago there was a veneer behind it. Now that's kind of
Their excuse for being being outward the horrible people that they are inward. And this is, again, we're talking about housekeepers, we're talking about hotel workers, we're talking about farm workers. We're not talking about MS-13 criminals. We want everybody, universally wants violent criminals and criminals off the streets with due process. That's the foundation of this country. Habeas corpus, due process, very important things. I know things we don't know much about, but really important stuff if we're going to keep our soul.
Absolutely. And even today, there were press releases from various departments in the Trump administration about how they're stopping undocumented immigrants from accessing things like SNAP, Medicaid, Labor Department programs. But in essence, that's not what their press releases are actually doing. Not only do they have no evidence that undocumented immigrants are accessing things like Social Security. We've seen conspiracy theories about that. Really, it's just propaganda to make these cuts to all these programs, to add red tape, bureaucracy, which is in essence just a way to entrap people and cut people from these programs. And
first they came for them, then they came for the rest of us. That there's a perfect example, Michael. Great reporting. I look forward to your next piece coming out next week on this topic, and I'd love to have you come back and share some more down the road.
Sounds great. Thanks, Rick.
Michael, I appreciate the time. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think it's heavy-handed, or are you on that camp of, the heck with them? Let these horrible things happen to these people. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
News from the center, WRCE. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. This afternoon, we'll see mostly sunny skies and a high near 82. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 61. Sunshine with a high near 83 on Sunday. A touch warmer Monday, sunshine with a high near 88. Chance of a storm Tuesday and 88.
Currently, 75 degrees.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Trump is again trying to have it both ways on agricultural workers. He says they're working on, quote, a temporary pass where the farmer can have a little control as opposed to you walk in and take everybody away. He's describing feudalism, where the people who work the land are more under direct control of the land owners rather than the rule of law. He wants the vassals. He wants the lords. He wants the peasants.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I gotta tell you, I've been enjoying the big bromance breakup as Trump and Musk have found their parting ways, and it's been every bit as entertaining as I predicted it would be when it began, because this stuff never seems to end well. But here's the thing, for me, Musk has always been this kind of huckster kind of character who's found a way to get really, really rich off of the welfare dime while pointing at other people, accusing them of inefficiency and all that nonsense. And here to share some thoughts on, what is Musk? Is he a visionary? Is he the guy who's going to save the planet, save our environment? Or is he just another huckster trying to put money in his pocket? Here to share some thoughts on that very topic, I've asked my good friend Greg Pallas to come share some thoughts. Greg, as you know, is one of the greatest investigative journalists of our time, New York best-selling author, and also the director and all of that of Vigilante Incorporated. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much, Rick. Glad to really be back with you again.
So let's start with the big bromance breakup. Thoughts on the love affair gone awry?
Well, look, you got two con artists, and so one has to out-con the other. Again, I would say if you go to GregPallas.com, in fact, and you will see, and I'm now a columnist with Raw Story, my latest on Elon Musk, and I've had stories at GregPallas.com on Elon Musk welfare queen. The guy totally lives on all things he accuses government workers of doing. He's a fraud. He's an abuser. He's a scammer. And
shock.
He wastes our money. So what's happened is that this guy is the richest man in the world for one reason, because you and I as taxpayers have paid for him. This guy doesn't sell us cars. That's not how he makes money. If he made money selling cars, they say, okay, I mean, I was not a big fan of Henry Ford, but at least we got cars out of it. But we don't get that from Musk. He is, number one, first and foremost, a pollution salesman. That is, if you look at Tesla's numbers for the last quarter, Tesla earned less than $500 million in profit for its whole worldwide operation. That's like one of the least profitable car companies in the world. But the only reason he made any profit at all is that he sells pollution credits to other car companies, principally General Motors. Now, what does that mean? Yeah. Pollution credits. He's a pollution salesman. What he's doing is he's taking your good intentions. You buy a Tesla and you think, oh, I've got a zero emission car and I'm saving the planet. The hell you are, my friend. What you're doing is Musk is taking your good intentions on this so-called zero emission cars, and he's taking the pollution that you agreed to pay extra to give up, and he's selling that to General Motors and other car makers, mostly GM, where they have to pay him hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars a year. And what they do is they buy the right to pollute. So when you buy a Tesla, that allows General Motors to sell a Tahoe, which gets 15 miles per gallon and is a major pollution machine. So when you buy a Tesla, you're also buying General Motors the right to pollute. Worse, you think your carbon footprint has gone down because you bought a Tesla? Think again, Jacko. There is no such thing as a zero emission car. In fact, it's against the law. The law is called Newton's second law of thermodynamics. There is no such thing as an emission-free car. When you buy a Tesla and you stick in that plug, if you are in Colorado, remember, you've just moved your pollution from the tailpipe of your car to the smokestack of an electric plant. There's no such thing as emission-free cars. So in Colorado, Wyoming, where 100% of electricity, 100% is from coal power, if you charge up your Tesla in Wyoming, your car is 100% coal powered. And so add the coal that your car is using, and in Colorado, it's mostly coal, and about 30% of America is running off coal as coal electricity. If you're using coal electricity for your car, you've increased the massive amount of pollution in America, while Elon is selling your so-called emissions-free credits to other companies to pollute more. Now, look, we have to be honest, Rick. Who made Elon Musk the richest man in the world? This is the Democratic Party. And we got to be honest about this. With this BS indulgences where we allow pollution credits to be sold like the way that the Catholic Church used to sell before the Reformation, used to sell indulgences. So you pay a certain amount of money to the church and your relatives don't go to hell. So now you buy a Tesla and you're basically buying an indulgence for General Motors and other car companies to pollute even more. Not only is there zero savings, anyone who buys a Tesla is increasing global warming. You are increasing the net pollution in the United States.
So hold on, now you've opened up this massive can of worms now, because I can hear the audience, I can hear their heads exploding, because we've been told, hey, you know, electric vehicles are in the future. It's cleaner. It's going to help us get off the dirty oil. It's going to do all these good things.
First of all, Musk doesn't believe it. Anything.
No, I'm not saying Musk at all.
The reason he survives is on one thing. It's called tariffs. What Donald Trump calls his favorite word in the English language, tariffs. Now, right now, if we didn't have more than 100% tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles, if we really believe that there's a crisis, we can literally stop car pollution and global warming within 2 years.
Yeah, and you would crash our economy
by doing
that.
Chinese cars,
sure.
The BYDs. BYD is selling electric cars for $10,000 retail. Now, if there really is
a climate emergency, then what we want is we have a nation, China, ready to sell us cars where, listen, for $10,000, $15,000, I can buy a car that's actually much better than any Tesla for $10,000, $15,000. That would end massive pollution by autos. I can tell you here in California, we could end the smog tomorrow morning, end those goddamn tariffs. I'm telling you that right now, Rick. End the tariffs.
Yeah, I'm not with you on that at all. Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit. Not with you on that at all.
Okay.
Because you would crash our entire auto industry. The entire economy of this country would collapse.
Rick, come on. You just, if we have a climate emergency, if you have a fire department and you said, and the Chinese could sell us, and if you had a fire in your house and you were told, well, you can contact the fire department. They'll charge you $30,000 to show up to put the fire out, or $10,000 from China. Do we have an emergency or not? If we don't have a climate emergency, I have no problem with tariffs on Chinese cars. You're talking about two different things. Okay. We either have a climate emergency or we don't. Now, the issue of U.S. auto jobs, which are gone, there's no way that the U.S. auto jobs will survive in the new electric-powered world. They're gone. What you have to do is come up with a real solution for U.S. auto workers to have real work and real jobs, but you can't do it by tariffs because you have a choice, a very simple choice. And I'm sorry, it's a difficult choice. You have auto jobs in the U.S. making combustion of global frying cars, or you can bring in Chinese cars cheap. Those are your two flavors. And if you insist on saying, we don't care about climate, so we're just going to play Elon Musk a bunch of money to pretend that he's saving our planet, which he is not. That's fine. But those are two different things, Rick. Those are absolutely two different things. If you want to save the U.S. auto industry, then forget about saving the planet from global warming. What we have to do is make a decision in America how we protect auto workers and steel workers and workers in U.S. industry. And we cannot do it by tariffs. We can't do it by tariffs.
So, because now my mind is
going,
okay,
can do it by tariffs, but we can't. Trump is wrong. I'm sorry, Rick. Trump is wrong.
No, I'm not on Trump's side with the tariff issue. I think tariffs used strategically as part of an overall strategy are a good tool. It has to be in the toolbox. I'm sorry.
I work I work for both the United Steelworkers Union. I work for the United Auto Workers, when I was working with the Steelworkers Union, they asked me about tariffs. I did an investigation. You know, for those who don't know Greg Palast, I am, by definition, I am a forensic economist. I got my degree in economics from the University of Chicago, and here's the thing. The United Steelworkers asked me, what about, can we put tariffs on Japanese steel to save auto worker jobs? And the answer is, and if you see an article I wrote for Tom Hartman, for the TomHartman.com, no, you can't. Because what I found for the steel workers is that the more they raised tariffs, the more we lost jobs in steel. Now, why is that? Because when you raise tariffs, the steel industry simply raises prices, because now they're protected from competition. The higher the price of a good, it's real simple. It's called Say's Law, supply and demand. If you raise the price of something, you will sell less of it, believe it or not. So when we raise tariffs on steel and aluminum, as Trump has done, you lose jobs in the steel and aluminum industry. I calculated this. I did this for the Steelworkers Union. I said, tariffs on Japanese steel were costing steelworker jobs. We had a massive, the minute we put import tariffs on Japanese steel, the number of jobs in the steel industry plummeted because raised the price of steel and that we lost jobs.
So then let's play this out then, because as you just said a moment ago, you can buy $10,000 cars from Japan, from China. Immediately you're going to wipe out every new car bought in this country.
Because absolutely,
everyone's gonna. You're gonna lose one in seven jobs that are tied to the auto industry.
No, you're gonna lose because they're one in seven jobs. You're not gonna lose auto dealerships. In fact, you're gonna make more money than ever. Longshoremen will have jobs at high rates. And, you know, it's, look, it's real simple. I don't mind. If you want to, we can say we have a choice.
Just ask
it. We either end global warming, we end pollution, or we say, okay, let's pay people to pollute.
So let me pull this back to what you just said a minute ago, because you just said a minute ago that all of the cars are, you know, in Wyoming or Montana, I think it was, you said, 100% coal powered.
That's right.
So if you're going to charge those electric vehicles that are going to save the planet, because you just said a minute ago, coal power is worse. I'm confused now.
Well, on net. Yeah, so if you think you're being virtuous because you're buying a Tesla, if you're in Wyoming or Colorado, you're using coal power. Yes, so there's no question that electric cars are very much equivocal. The big problem is we have to make a decision in America. Do we have a climate crisis or do we have a jobs crisis? And I think we have both. And we have to deal. I'm going to tell you right now. If China's making cars, electric cars that they can sell for $10,000, you're not, you know, it's, you're shouting into the tide. They're coming. They are coming. And what we don't want to do is say, well, let's make Elon Musk the richest man in the world because we're preventing him from having to compete with cheaper cars. And remember, this is a union busting SOB of the worst order, a guy who banned in California. Now, remember, Musk is a welfare queen. First of all, let's remember one thing that people forget. He did not invent the Tesla. He bought a company called Tesla, which is making a few thousand cars. And he got the state of California to put up $500 million to build a factory in Oakland to make these cars. So we gave him the money to be the richest man. Why not give it to Rick Smith? I'd rather give $500 million to Rick Smith. But they gave it to Elon Musk.
Right.
Then the federal government marched in. The state of California gives you a $4,500 credit for electric cars. So you have, and you have now, the U.S. government was paying $7,500 for you to buy an electric car. That is, I was just in Chicago. I saw a lot of black people waiting for buses. Black people waiting for buses are paying for Teslas in Beverly Hills that I see right out my window. I'm here in Hollywood Hills. Whole bunch of Teslas. Thank you so much. You people in, you poor people in Chicago, you people on food stamps, thank you for buying our Teslas for us here in Hollywood. We love it. Thank you.
Well, this is what the big, beautiful bill was about, making sure that Elon has a little bit more.
Yes, let's not forget that the big, beautiful bill, while it took away those some of those tax credits, and by the way, Trump is right about that. The reason Elon's freaking out is that he's losing billions. They're falling a cliff, his sales. Here's the only guy. He's a huckster. Look, his sales of his cars are falling off a cliff for good reason. And so what he's doing, he's bitching about the fact that the big, beautiful bill attacked his industry and not the oil industry. Boy, will I agree with that anytime. So both he and Trump are right that they're both jerks ripping off the American public, threatening the American worker. And remember that the Tesla plants, don't forget, are highly automated. They're non-union. They're not just non-union. They're anti-union. And they do anything to stop paying taxes after the people of California gave him billions of dollars. This schmuck runs off to Texas, to Governor Abbott. And then they could say, oh, look, Texas has more jobs, building jobs while California losing them.
And he's built his own little company town again. We're making company towns great again.
And we're back to company towns. Exactly. Next thing they're going to be paying you in crypto. That is company script.
Well, you're the economist. Crypto, since you brought that up, I've got a lot of Democrats telling me, I did a thing the other day about it, that I'm not thrilled that they're going to start issuing mortgages based on crypto.
Think about this. Cryptocurrency is not, it's not a currency. I'm an economist. I'm telling you this right now. It's not a currency. You can't go into a pizza parlor and use crypto to buy anything. You can't even buy a Tesla, by the way. If you know, Musk will not take $100,000 crypto coin and give you a Tesla Model X or S. What he will do is they'll convert into US dollars. And here's the problem with crypto. It costs a fragment of a penny to print a dollar bill. To do one Bitcoin, it costs literally tens of thousands of dollars in electricity. The total use, crypto uses more electricity than the entire nation of Italy. It is one of the greatest threats. Crypto, we've had crypto so-called miners reopen a plant in Colorado, a coal plant in Colorado, just to generate the electricity to so-called do mining for cryptocurrency. How many, have you ever seen a crypto miner? They have those little hard hats, the little light on them? No, they don't. Cryptocurrency miners are guys who suck up massive, massive, massive amounts of electricity, especially coal electric, because that's where they're basing it. And they were in China using coal electric. They're going to nations like Kazakhstan, and where they're using fossil fuels. If you want to burn the earth, invest in crypto and buy a Tesla.
There you go. There's your answer. Greg, as always, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Good stuff.
Okay, we got to protect. We got to come up. By the way, Rick, really important. We do have to come up with a plan for American industrial workers to keep union level jobs, providing things that we need. That's what we must have. We need we do need a Green New Deal, but we're not going to get, but the Green Bad Deal is making Elon Musk the richest guy on earth with our tax money.
No,
while he's burning up the earth. Go to gregpalace.com and write in Musk, and you'll see my articles on Elon Musk. No, he's not your green savior. I'm sorry. He's nobody's savior except Elon Musk.
There you go. Greg, appreciate the time. Great stuff. Check out gregpalace.com. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that the American Indian Movement began at a meeting in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A group of 200 Native Americans gathered together to discuss a response to the U.S. government's history of broken treaties and the devastating consequences on Native peoples. The statistics of unyielding poverty and high unemployment in Native communities were staggering. By 1970, 40% of the Native population lived in poverty. The unemployment rate was 10 times the national average. Life expectancy was only 44 years old. In the early 1970s, activists staged a series of occupations at Alcatraz, Wounded Knee, and at Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore is built on a site in the Black Hills that is sacred to the Ocheti Sakowin, or the Great Sioux Nation. The United States government promised Native rights to the land in a treaty that was broken when gold was discovered. In 1972, activists staged a Trail of Broken Treaties caravan, which ended in a six-day occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Washington, D.C. They issued a statement that read, quote, "We seek a new American majority, a majority that is not content merely to confirm itself by superiority of numbers, but which conscience is committed toward prevailing upon the public will in ceasing wrongs and doing right." Beginning in the 1970s, the United States government began to respond to Native people's demands. A series of federal acts gave Native communities more control over their education and improving their health care. Lawsuits brought by tribes resulted in further economic autonomy. Yet by 2014, one in four Native people still lived in poverty.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I tell you, I love Greg Palast, and check out his website, gregpalast.com, where we differ. And look, he's clearly an anti-tariff guy, because in the economic bubble, and we're talking purely about this lane of vision, which is what's best for the economy, and or or the environment in his position, which is we got to get to electric vehicles as fast as possible. If that's the future, if that's what's going to save us, we got to go as fast as we can. And I've had this argument with liberals and the left for a long time. Because there's the political reality that gets left out in this. And this is during the break, is what, you know, Greg said, well, that's a different question. No, it's all intertwined in the idea of political economy. There's politics, there's economics, and then there's the political economy where the two marry. And that's where my area is. What's possible? How do we move forward to get where we want to go, but in a way that, quite frankly, isn't going to bottom out your economy and end up having millions, literally tens of millions or 100 million people unemployed? Because if you lose the auto industry in this country, and if you open up Chinese vehicles into this country without tariffs, without some bit of a barrier, you're going to wipe them all out. And, you know, his example of Japan and steel back in the 80s is a little different, because Japan wasn't using slave labor. They weren't exploiting a segment of the Uyghurs, for instance. So for me, there's very differences of how we go about it. And again, from the political economy standpoint, tariffs as a tool, never said I'm all in on them, but as a tool and an overall strategy, yeah, we have to have them for right now. Would I love to have that perfect utopian on paper world? Sure. You know, when I was coaching football years ago, every play I ever drew up scored a touchdown every time. You know, you're on that 1-inch line, and that dive play, he popped it for 100 yards every time, because that's what on paper does for you. In the real world, where you have to worry about communities losing jobs and what it's going to mean to the school system and the public services and what families are going to go through as you're losing these factories. And look, we traveled throughout the Midwest back in 2022, and what we came across was exactly what we've been talking about. Broken communities where you've got drug treatment centers, and you've got payday lenders, and you got liquor stores, but you know what you don't have? You don't have factories anymore. You don't have people with jobs. And understand, while we're fighting over this now, what I think are the scraps of what's left of our economy, because the Elon Musks of the world, and this is where Greg and I are 100% in line, is that Musk is never going to be the savior. Trump certainly is never going to be the savior. What we need to be focusing on is, how do we make sure that American families can survive this next transition? Because we're not really talking about how bad AI is going to be, how bad robotics is going to be, automation, all of this stuff that's going to take tens of millions, if not, well, half of all the jobs we currently do. I drive a truck for a living. I know in 5 years, get ready for it, my long-haul brethren. We're going to do away with at least half of long-haul truck drivers. First, they're going to introduce them as, we're just filling the void. We're short drivers. And then you're going to start with seeing wages go even further, because understand, most truck driving jobs are sweatshops on wheels now anyway. You're going to see those wages getting lower and lower, until eventually, hey, I can't operate for that. Oh, well, we're going to have to repossess that truck. And oh, but we got to move that freight. So we're going to automate. They're already running driverless vehicles right now. The roads are full of them. Eventually, that's all you're going to see. And we're not talking about any of that. What we're still talking about is well, we're pecking over the carcass of what was once the most powerful economy in the history of humanity. The question is, again, to me, from a political economy standpoint, how do you ensure that families can put food on the table, keep a roof over their heads, and do it in a way with some dignity and respect? I don't know, because the sad reality is it's a political decision. And we in this country are not anywhere near politically on the same page. I don't even know that we're in the same book. Wait a minute, not even the same library most of the time. And that's a testament to how well the Elon Musks of the world have divided us. it's a testament to how well the wealth class of this country has used the Jay Gould, I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. Here we are, folks. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You agree, disagree, worried about your job? I want to hear it, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Amid threats of new tariffs on foreign goods, 30% on Mexico and the European Union, it's all an apparent work in progress, including deadlines, says ABC's Olivia Rubin.
This date has been pushed back. Right now, it sits at August 1st. Previously, it sat at July 9th, and previously, it sat at Liberation Day in April. So the can keeps getting kicked down the road, and we'll just have to see whether that remains or whether August 1st sticks, and that is, in fact, when these tariffs go into effect.
FEMA repeatedly granted appeals to remove Central Texas's Camp Mystics buildings from their floodplain map, with the camp then expanding to areas that were inundated in last weekend's disaster. That from an Associated Press review. FEMA's National Assistance Helpline saw a wait time surge and struggled to respond to survivor calls following the flood, say sources familiar to ABC News. FEMA tells ABC its disaster call center responded to every caller swiftly and efficiently. This is ABC News. Amazon.